It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How about Matt Eberflus finally addressing the first 15 controversy that arose in London?
I don't know if that's completely all the way accurate. I mean, we always have openers that we practice, and that's a big part of it. And so we have several plays listed as openers. So openers are plays that you're going to use on first and second down. And then obviously you go to your third down script based on the distances. And that's what pretty much everybody does.
But Eberflus did concede there was communication between the leadership of the offense and himself and Waldron that resulted in a first 15 script that players can use for their walkthroughs and to study on their own. Your reaction to all this?
I'm still kind of shocked that they didn't do that to open the season. I think that every team that I've covered over the years has done that. And I think that, you know, listening to Olin talk about it, part of what they're doing is they're giving you a list of things, and they're you know, these are plays where they want to see how a team reacts. He said that he would go back when he got the plays, he would go back and he would watch tape of these teams, every team, and try to figure out how they would respond to whatever the play was. And then he would look at it again the next day, the morning of the game, and then he would go into the game and have information. Hey, they're doing this. They're not responding like we thought they would. They are doing this instead. He thought it was like a crucial bit of information for a player to study and for a player and a coach to talk over. He would talk to the offensive line coach about it, the offensive coordinator. It was like crucial information in terms of preparation. And they tried it differently because they were concerned about overloading the rookie. And it wasn't until, as DJ told us, it wasn't until they had this conversation. They actually went to what Shane Waldron had done previously in Seattle. So, I mean, he's used to doing it too. And they tried something different. And, you know, Flusie can say that it was, you know, that maybe it's not quite accurate. But when you do say, yeah, we did meet with them, and yeah, we did change it, that seems like it's pretty accurate. It seems like that they weren't doing it in entirely the same fashion, and they had to alter to make everybody kind of go along with it. The very fact that you had a leadership committee that went to the head coach, to the offense coordinator, and then they said, okay, and then they put together the first 15 as they currently do. I mean, I think something was going on and they changed it and it's working. So we should be happy about it. But yeah, it's kind of a big deal.
Well, where there's smoke, there's fire. So there's definitely something there. But again, you know, as we grew up playing football, and again, I never played in the NFL, but each year you played football, like that first 15 was kind of like a line. It was kind of football jargon, lingo, right? But when you got to varsity, it wasn't like the third play that we've practiced 56 times between Monday and Friday, or Thursday if you're playing Friday night. You weren't running it if it was third and inches. You were running a different play. So I think it's from a lost in translation, like we wondered out loud, is this part of it? You know, the best thing that's come out of this, two things. Number one, when you win, these kind of stories get put off to the side because it doesn't seem to matter as much.
Right.
But the good news is there was a discussion, and Shane Waldron is not married to, I run this offense, period, exclamation point. Like, this is what the guys like to do. This is what this group can excel at. We're now in the sixth game. We have a pretty good idea of what I brought to the table that works and brought to the table that doesn't work, and we're going to adjust accordingly. That's the good news, because so many football coaches are, this is what I run. I don't care if you're good at it or not. We're going to run my offense. Well, what if we're not built to run your offense? We need to adapt, and they're adapting.
That's a good takeaway. It was after the third game and the second loss that they had the intervention, which I don't know if they would have had the success without it. What we're talking about, I believe, is maybe a matter of semantics, because the Bears kind of privately looked at this as, well, they've always had what they call openers for first and second down, and then third down. They structure these things as things they want to get to early on and maybe even on the opening drive. Now, did they script them 1 through 15 like a playlist? They did not. Players, you know, wanted that. They craved that. What I find hard to believe is that they spent all this time in training camp and together before the season, and this never came up in terms of what you would want to do and how you would tailor it to the team and the offense the way they would want it, the way they would need it. Because it turned out that they needed to have the first 15 scripted so they could practice it, so they could rehearse it, so they could go into it with a peace of mind on Sunday. I think what the coaches thought they were providing in flexibility, players interpreted it as ambiguity, and it was too vague, and they wanted it more specific so they felt more prepared. Whatever the case is, Shane Waldron did show a flexibility not every offensive coordinator that has been through town has shown. So they're going to look at this, because they're 4-2 at the break, as a net positive. Now, they could have maybe done it differently. Maybe they don't learn from their mistakes that way. With a rookie quarterback, I think a lot of it is trial and error. That was an error. They learned from it. And I think that's good to learn from your mistakes and move forward. But I do think that there was a difference in maybe something lost in translation and a matter of semantics.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Voice of Brad Biggs is here at 7 o'clock. Biggs time through six games. What position group has surprised you the most? On the flip side, which has been the most disappointing?
I think that I'm most surprised by the defensive linemen, the defensive tackles. Well, you pulled out two names yesterday that you had to kind of look at your roster and like, okay, Byron Cowart, yeah, he's the guy they activate every Saturday off the practice squad, right? Chris Martin, that's a guy that is on the defensive
I gotta go find my depth chart.
You know, it's a lot of guys.
Chris Williams?
Chris Williams, yeah, not Chris Martin. See, you kind of, you have guys who have emerged.
Chris Martin's, he's in that band, that English rock Coldplay.
Yeah, okay. See, I was thinking English. I was thinking British. So, yeah, Chris Williams had a sack. Who are these guys? Now, Javon Dexter has taken a step forward. Can still get better against the run, but he's been a force against the pass. And what they have done collectively, the presence of Eric Washington has been felt. That's been a very well-coached group. Daryl Taylor has come off the edge with abandon. Brian Baldinger is using Austin Booker as an example of effort on the Baldy's breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
This is a defensive line that is well-coached and been a surprise. And maybe they have played as well as they have played because they felt like they were discounted or left out or overlooked. That always helps. As far as the, I don't want to say disappointed, but I have to be honest about my first reaction to this question. We spent so much time talking about the Bears' trio of wide receivers. And I know we're coming off a game where Keenan Allen had two touchdown catches, and last week DJ Moore had his big game. But I do think overall the wide receiver production from those three guys has not been what we thought it would be, or maybe what I expected through six games. So defensive tackles on the upside, wide receivers still with more to show.
It's a good call on both. I didn't think of the wide receivers like that, so you got me thinking. That's always a good thing to get me thinking, but you got me thinking, David. Disappointing, it's I guess low-hanging fruit, but it's the offensive line. It hasn't developed into what we thought. And again, this could be play calling. Again, call the plays that the offensive line can block. There's a concept, right? But how about the running back room? Now that everybody's healthy, Swift, they're calling plays that work for DeAndre Swift. And when they need a couple of yards on the inside, they can go to Roschon Johnson. So I think the running back room is a room that's been better than advertised.
Yeah, I think the best position group on the team is their secondary. And maybe we thought it was going to be the wide receivers going into the season, but I think it's the secondary. And now we've seen injuries to the secondary, and there were three of your top five secondary members missing from that game, and they still played really well. And that's why, you know, you got to kind of bow to John Hoke a little bit and say, great job, really well done getting guys up and running and plugged in and ready to play, and to the players as well, being there. But you want everyone to be healthy and ready to go, and that includes, you know, Smith, Terrell Smith, too. You need him back, and you'd like to see him play. He was a fifth-round pick. I just think that I don't know how you get past the offensive line, because that was sort of one of the problem areas to open up the season. They clearly weren't ready to open up the season. The whatever way you want to term it, whatever's happened with Nate Davis is a black eye for the offensive line. You know, that was a guy that you envisioned as a starter, a returning starter on that line, and he's not even active now. So that damages them quite a bit. And I think that the fact that the guy they went out and got, the guy they really thought was going to shift their fortunes, has also been injured and unable to play, in Ryan Bates. So I think that kind of that combination has got to be what's the most disappointing position or group. And hopefully, you know, Matt Pryor's done very well. When Bill Murray was forced to play, he did very well. I think there are positives that have happened there, and I don't want to be totally negative, but if you had to say one area, yeah, it's the offensive line, just who you imagine would be there when it started and who's there now.
Mully, I got a question for you and Hawk.
That's the voice of Jared Payton, 9 o'clock. Jared Payton with Mully and Hall. What did you think of the Bulls showing at Milwaukee? And what are you expecting on Wednesday when Lonzo Ball will reportedly play for the first time since January of 2022?
Yeah, I watched a lot of that game, and I found it wildly entertaining. And I understand preseason basketball and that some players are there to, you know, go through, get a sweat, and play a little pickup, and they don't want to get fouled if they're going to the basket because they're just – they don't want anybody getting in their way. Hey, this is my show. I'm just here for the preseason. Wait, did you foul me? How dare you foul me? That seemed to be Giannis's reaction to – what the Bulls were up to. But the Bulls were, they were running the floor and they were playing hard. And you got a lot of young players and even veteran players that are trying to make the roster. And when you sat down six of your top nine guys, you would think that that would mean that you get blown out a little bit, unless the one guy who's playing is Mike Jordan. And that's not what happened. It was a pretty competitive game, given that the Bulls were not playing their top dogs. So I thought it was interesting. I thought it was fun. You know, I knew going in that all those guys were out, and it didn't bother me at all. I really enjoyed watching some of the young guys run the floor and seeing Josh Giddey and what he can do. And it was a lot of new. And a lot of new can be good.
P. Williams, DNP. The Vooch, DNP. Kobe White, DNP. Zach LaVine, DNP. Io, DNP. Me, DNW. Did not watch. Okay. I mean, give me a break. What was I tuning in for? I mean, I am all in tomorrow.
Love of the game, buddy. Love of the game.
6:45. We got Chuck and Bill. Right?
Okay.
6:45.
Chuck
it's going to be on. I have the Chicago Sports Network. I have a problem with the graphic. If anybody over there cares,
I don't
like it up in the top left. They changed it?
They changed it.
Oh, they did.
They adjusted.
Oh, okay. Good. I'm glad all the complaining that we didn't do on the air worked.
Zach Zaidman did the game on Saturday night. And they welcome you back tomorrow. You're going to be watching Lonzo Ball.
I will watch. I'm all in.
He will be making medical history. And that is worth celebrating. He will be celebrating a personal triumph, and that is easy to respect and to pull for. He is the easiest guy in that locker room to give applause to right now because of all that he's endured. So, yeah, that'll be fascinating theater, and I feel good for him. I don't know how he fits into this team, and that's okay. That can be worked out later if it's worked out at all. As for last night, yeah, there were reasons to watch. Matez Bezelis is a thing. up and down. He's relentless. His attitude and swagger and confidence is something to watch and notice and not ignore, Dustin, not ignore. This is somebody who is a high draft pick who they expect big things from. Maybe not early, but certainly he's going to factor into the plans long term because they believe he's as good as anybody in that draft. And last night he was fearless in attacking Giannis and dunking on him and making Stacey King exclaim, "Meet me at the rim and don't be late." That was fun. I don't know if I liked 17 of 54 from three-point range. I like the Bulls having a tendency and a desire to shoot more threes. I just would like to see them make more threes.
Different question on a different topic.
Voice of Mike Florio, what's your take on the MLB playoffs after the Mets and Dodgers game, followed by the Yankees and Guardians matchup? Are you cheering for any one team or more against somebody? And are you getting your mind around all the different possibilities of a World Series matchup?
Soto and Stanton, home ring, that's what people come to see. Judge will break out of his slump at some point, right? Maybe for the World Series. I hope it's for the World Series because I would love Yankees-Dodgers. That would be romantic baseball theater. It would be reminiscent of a different era and age. And I think everybody of a certain age would appreciate what that tradition represents. Yankees and Dodgers. I don't know if Ohtani would pitch in the World Series. I don't know if the Dodgers are going to make the World Series. The Mets aren't messing around. Frankie Lindor wants to be heard. He's an easy guy to root for as well. That team feels like they're a team of destiny. They know they don't care if they have the second biggest payroll. They feel like the Miracle Mets, and it's 1969, and they're defying the odds and fighting back against all this. I still think it's going to be Dodgers and Yankees. Sean Manaea was terrific. You look at the Dodgers, they'll probably bounce back in New York, but the Yankees won and the Mets stole one in L.A. Yankees-Dodgers, that's what I want.
I was really impressed with the Mets' response yesterday. They got just destroyed in the opener, don't get a run, and then the Dodgers are on this 33-inning scoreless streak by their pitchers, and Francisco Lindor, boom, and that's it. What's the better story? Is it Dodgers-Yankees or is it Mets-Yankees? I mean, it might be a little too much New York.
Yes.
But, like,
who wants Mets-Yankees?
But pretty good. Like, it's a pretty good story, right? Like, the Mets at one point were 10 games under 500. I'm saying if it's Yankees-Dodgers, it goes back to, well, the two teams that spent about the most money made it to the postseason. All right, Tom Ricketts, are you paying attention? Right? Like, that'll be the theme around here. Buy it, Tom, okay? In order to get back, you got to buy it. We're not the Guardians. We're not in Cleveland. You know, ask Joakim Noah, okay? Cleveland's no Gouda. So,
you like it? You think Cleveland's cool?
Thank you, Joakim. Thank you, Brandon. But I want the Yankees in there, and I don't care who they play, to be honest. The Yankees against either one will be fun baseball.
Yeah, I'm wrapping my mind around the idea of a Subway series in New York. I'm trying to see how I feel about that because I rejected that idea initially. But I think I really like this Mets story, and I think I, love watching Francisco Lindor as a player. That was amazing yesterday to watch. So they get a double. So he comes up, and they decide, well, we're not going to let him. Or maybe they had a man on third. He comes up, they're like, man, we're not going to let him beat us. So just walk him. Don't even, they signal walk him. And then they walk a guy, and then Vicieto hits a grand slam. It's like, it was unbelievable. Now it's 6-0, and that pretty much ended the game. The Yankees win in the late game, and it's just wrapping your mind around the idea that now that the Mets have stolen a game in L.A., where are you at with starting pitching? I know L.A. had gone how many innings without allowing a run, 30-something innings, but boy, that ended, and you got to admire the way they tied that series. Now you go back to New York. I'm just trying to wrap my mind around the idea of maybe a Subway Series being a fun thing. Because I don't think there's any way that the Yankees aren't going to get through. They just, even with Judge in a slump, Giancarlo Stanton, he's very good in the playoffs. His playoff numbers
are
shockingly
good. He's Mr. October.
He's Mr. Power in the playoffs. And here's one for you. This really caused me some pause when I saw the list of names of the guys. Among players with at least 100 playoff plate appearances, Stanton sits behind only Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, and Randy Arozarena in slugging percentage.
The three greatest sluggers of all time.
Wild one. But yeah, I'm trying to wrap my mind around the idea that I could like a Subway Series, a Crosstown Classic, whatever way you want to term it. And I don't think I will. I don't think that does much for me. But
oh boy, good question. Possible.
All right, we've got the extra point next.
No, we don't. We got two more questions.
I'm sorry. I mistook your signal there.
What's your reaction to Brett Bielema being honest about his personal feelings against Purdue when explaining why Saturday's win meant so much personally to him?
They really wanted to win this game for maybe they knew I was really into it, right? I'm into every game, but this one just has pissed me off on many different levels, to be quite honest. So, I just know how we run our business, right? And I'll stand on that, right? So, like, I love the way our guys fight, the way they practice, the way we prepare. I love the way we coach. I love the way they recruit. I love the way they develop. And to get this win was a big deal.
One more after this.
Just everything, right? Like, anybody that knows what I'm about, right? Like, just handle your business. Do things right, and a lot of good things can happen, right?
That is the head coach of the football team at U of I, Brett Bielema. Your reaction to what you just heard there?
Well, he doesn't like Ryan Walters very much. That's fairly obvious, I think, right? He doesn't like the Purdue head coach, who was his defensive coordinator, who went to Purdue and then took apparently too many of the assistants with him. And Purdue's had a terrible run this year, and they've already lost some of next year's recruits as a result of it. And I don't know if Ryan Walters is going to be looking for another job, frankly, at the end of the season. I'm not sure how long they're going to stay with that. It's been really, really poor. And it would appear that he will be taking those coaches somewhere else, because I don't know that he's going to be sticking around Purdue. But, man, they gave him a game. You know, he had a lot of information about Illinois. And is that accurate? Did he become the offensive play caller in the second half of that game? Pretty incredible to hear that story. But, I mean, they won the game, Illinois, and the coach was pleased that that happened, because he said the players understood that it meant a lot to him. And he never named Ryan Walters, but we have known there's bad blood over the number of coaches he took with him.
I really enjoyed it. I love a coach that's that honest, and I hope that the home state football team gets the best of Michigan this Saturday down at Champaign.
Big week for Illinois and Brett Bielema, no doubt about it. Michigan is a great challenge. Big week for Northwestern with Wisconsin locally. And that's going to be another great big week in the Big Ten. Brett Bielema can't hide his emotions, and I don't think he should try. Definitely there's some bad blood between the way Ryan Walters left Champaign and went to Purdue and took some people along the way. There is a way to leave a job, and apparently Ryan Walters left in a way that bothered Brett Bielema to this day. Purdue is a mess. They fired their offensive coordinator earlier in the year. You did not expect them to come back after being down 27-3 at the half and end up losing 50-49 in overtime. Think about that, 46 points in the second half and you lose. That's a tough day at the office. Brett Bielema, keep being Brett Bielema. This is the way you build your program. Like it or not, he doesn't apologize for who he is and what he stands for. I respect that. And he's put Illinois in a position now where they are 16th in the country. They are back in the top 25 and back relevant again in the Big Ten. Good for him.
Kind of similar to the question that the guy asked me over there.
If you're a diehard fan of a team here in town, choose any team you'd wish. Would you be okay if your coach, your manager, your skipper was yelling at Boo Birds a la Nick Sirianni, or would you be embarrassed or mad at him? Would it depend on how successful that particular coach was?
This is a great question. I think it's hilarious. By the way, I stand corrected. Illinois is 22nd, not 16th. Indiana is 16th. Nick Sirianni is a clown. I think that we can establish that. He is a well-established clown in Philadelphia. I don't like the way that he went after fans. I don't like the way that he comports himself on the sidelines. And I don't like a lot about Nick Sirianni. And I don't know why it is something about him that stands out, but he kind of bugs me. I don't think that he's long for Philadelphia. I like the way that he teared up during the national anthem at the Super Bowl. That's what I remember him. That was his defining moment. But I think he's a clown. And I don't think that about a lot of NFL coaches, but something about him rubs me the wrong way. Somebody asked me yesterday what I would think about Nick Sirianni or a coach if he were a Super Bowl winning coach or a World Series winning coach, if that were Ditka or Ozzie in Chicago. Would you support a guy going after fans? I don't think that I would. I think I might understand it a little better. I might think understand that they would have a little bit more rope to play with, but I don't think that I would ever support a coach going after a paid customer, even though in a game that they were winning, just because he was kind of trying to have the last word. It's a bad look for the franchise. It's a terrible look for the coach. So no, I would hope it wouldn't depend on how successful the coach is.
Well, it does depend on how successful the coach is. That's where you get your leash, no doubt about that. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but that's how you get a leash when you win. The other part is, what did they say to Nick Sirianni? You know, did they say something about his children? Did they say something about his wife? Did they say, you know, how far did the insult go? Does that then merit going after the fan because of what you said? I mean, Mike Ditka famously, right? 86, you know, get your mouth shut, jerk. Here's your IQ buddy zero, right? That whole thing. Again, what had Ditka done? Ditka won a Super Bowl, right? So he had that leash, but that was kind of the beginning of the end, if you will. That was kind of started to spiral a little bit. That's the one that I most famously remember. I mean, you know, we've had the Cubs manager go after the fans, right? The Lee Elia rant is about a skipper manager going after the bleacher bums. Right. So there's been plenty of these things here in town. It wasn't just like the manager didn't go out to the stands and start pointing and gyrating. So I do think winning buys you some time, though.
Yeah, I mean, someone used the word clown. That is pretty much the word that would apply to that sort of behavior. Dustin, pretend you don't hear it, whatever he's saying to you. You are the head coach of the team. You're not Mike Ditka. Your team is unraveling. You apparently are unraveling. You go to the bye week and you shave your head. I mean, I'd worry. Is the guy okay? Because that's not normal behavior, and that's not professional behavior to, you know, get puffy chested after a 20-16 victory over maybe the worst team in football. How bad is Cleveland? They got a quarterback who's quitting on them in games, and they're going nowhere, and all of a sudden they're all in trouble. And Nick Sirianni is the takeaway because he can't handle his business. I mean, you know, I got my bald head and I'm gone off the deep end. And now I'm going to scream at fans because they boo me. What the hell is wrong with him? He showed up with his kid after he did that. He showed up because he wanted to keep the reporters from apparently asking him hard questions. Listen, this guy is unraveling. He is not handling this well. He's handling it very badly. And I think that if you ever listen to him, I mean, his first news conference was a disaster. And he does that fairly regularly. He does this whole word salad thing. And he's unraveling. This is a guy that can't take what's going on the field or off the field. And it's a really bad look. And it is really amateur hour. And I hope that somebody spoke to him about it, because he seemed like he was ready to apologize for the way he had behaved. But, man, it's got to be better than that. It's got to be better. All right, now we do have the extra point, and we'll get to that next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
The first part of being smart is knowing what to do. We're going to We're going to know, we're going to have systems in place.